Welcome to today's edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Haley Gilley. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news, and the show starts with a look at California agricultural news. This past week, the Bureau of Reclamation announced an increase in Central Valley Project 2024 water supply allocations. After below-average precipitation in January, Reclamation announced that an initial water supply allocation for the CVP on February 21st. Mid to late February storms have since improved hydrological conditions, particularly for Northern California, allowing for a more robust water supply allocation. Thanks to the improved hydrology, we are pleased to announce a bump in water supply allocations for the Central Valley Project, said California Great Basin Regional Director Carl Stock. While the series of storms in Northern California improved the water supply outlook, a number of factors, particularly anticipated regulatory constraints throughout the spring, continued to limit the water supply allocation for South of Delta agriculture. In recognition of recent efforts to develop a South of Delta drought plan, Reclamation is reserving approximately 83,000 acre-feet of water currently in San Luis Reservoir that will contribute to a drought reservoir pool and is not considered as a volume of water available for this year's water supply allocations. Additionally, approximately 185,000 acre-feet of rescheduled water from the 2023 water year, also stored in San Luis Reservoir, is not included in the 2024 water supply allocation. Farmers and ranchers gathered at the state capitol in Sacramento last week to advocate on policies impacting agriculture from groundwater management to wildfires to technology. As they met with lawmakers and staff during annual Capital Ag Conference, which marks the start of the legislative year, the delegation of California Farm Bureau members focused particular energy on trying to rescue a program that provides financial compensation to ranchers whose livestock are impacted by wolves. Amid the state budget deficit, money ran out for the pilot program. Falling commodity prices, rising production costs, and water supply uncertainty are some of the factors weighing on planting decisions for California farmers this season. They say their crop options have narrowed, with canneries needing less acreage of processing tomatoes, with a major seed company ending its sunflower seed program in California. Growers who have pulled out permanent crops such as almonds and walnuts in recent years due to lower prices are also looking to plant annual crops on the open ground. Cotton and feed crops such as corn silage may be possibilities. The Food and Farm Resilience Coalition held a lobby day on Wednesday, March 13th to urge legislators to invest in a more climate-resilient, healthy, and equitable food and farming system. Over 30 stakeholders, including farmers, environmental justice advocates, industry leaders, and environmentalists, met with policymakers to secure much-needed funding for sustainable agricultural practices, farm worker health and safety, healthy food access, and regional food infrastructure. The group emphasized these investments are necessary to protect the future of our food system while simultaneously fighting climate change. Advocates aimed to garner support as the legislature began discussions on the climate, education, and housing bonds. California's current agricultural system contributes to climate change and at the same time, producers, farm workers, and an increasing number of Californians face unprecedented wildfires, catastrophic flood events, droughts, and rising food insecurity. Citrus growers in California can enroll in a program that provides up to $200,000 for projects to foster climate resilience and long-term sustainability. Program activities include webinars, technical assistance, transition services, and financial incentives to support the adoption of healthy soil management practices such as cover cropping, conservation cover, reduced tillage, whole orchard recycling, nutrient management, and pollinator-friendly hedge grow plants. The project will focus on social equality with a target on socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers, women, veterans, and more. The funding is part of a $5 million Healthy Soils Program block grant from the California Department of Food and Agriculture. The program will support 20 to 45 projects over 3 years for farmers in Fresno, Imperial, Kern, Kings, Riverside, San Bernardino, Santa Barbara, San Diego, Placer, and Ventura counties. FFA members and supporters from across the state of California returned to the Golden One Center for the closing session of the 96th State FFA Leadership Conference in Sacramento. The annual State Star Awards were handed out, and the winner will go on to compete at the national level. The winners are as followed: State Star in AgriScience, Liam Joy, St. Helena FFA; State Star Agribusiness, Trevor Wright, Hollister FFA; State Star in Agriculture Placement, Moriella Viara Madeira, State Star Farmer Emma Woods, Gustine FFA. Conference ambassadors, Courtesy Corps, and Press Corps members were also acknowledged for their assistance and efforts in helping make State FFA Conference successful. State FFA President Austin Bell reflected on his year of service during his retiring address and shared the three pillars that have been a driving force throughout his journey: community, faith, and agriculture. Bell encouraged members to discover their own pillars of purpose. Members heard one last performance by State FFA talent winner Caden Wallace of Porterville FFA. Following the recognition of past state officers, the 2023-2024 officer team was honored and retired their state officer jackets after their year of service. State FFA advisor Hugh Mooney thanked members of state staff and told stories about each officer. Students from Kingsburg, Turlock Christian, Hillmar, Santa Maria, and O'Neill's were elected by delegates to serve as the 2024-2025 State FFA officers and properly installed into their offices. The 97th California State FFA Leadership Conference is set to take place in Sacramento, California on April 3rd through 6th, 2025.
With water deliveries in full swing in parts of the Central Valley, water districts are looking to the snowpack to determine allocation. In the North Valley of Stanislaus County, Oakdale Irrigation District, known as OID, says things are looking good for 2024, thanks in part to a miracle March, according to General Manager Scott Moody.
Prior to March, we were not looking so well. We had quite a bit of rain, but not a lot of snowpack. And as most people probably understand, that snowpack is our savings account. We like to have that up there and let it melt slowly and keep the reservoirs full. So we're doing well. We expect, without question, to have a full allocation of water this year. Interestingly, though, that OID and SSJID's combined water rate is not, or water rate is not based upon how much storage there is. Ours is based on how much inflow flows into New Melones every year. So it can be kind of confusing. You look at the reservoir being full and think things are good, and that is good, but it doesn't necessarily correlate to our water rights, so to speak.
Oakdale and South San Joaquin Irrigation share one single water right, according to OID Board President Tom Orvis, who said the water right is the first 600,000 acre feet of water that comes in every year after October 1st into New Melones Lake.
So we even have priority rights over the federal government who control the dam. And as Scott said, and we're sitting right at about 2 million acre feet right now. So you're going to see a combination of irrigation to the districts, but you're also going to see a combination of releases down the river to try and make room for any possible snowpack, because they don't like to take New Melones over about 2.2 million acre feet, even though it's got 2.4 capacity. They don't like to do it because they, guess what they never did? They never completed the spillway.
Moody says other districts in the area are also looking at full water availability.
Everybody in the local area should be looking for 100% water availability, including Stockton East, which is like a contract water supplier out of New Melones. They are based on reservoir and stream, the river flows to dictate how much water they get. So everybody in the area should have 100% availability this year.
And when MID Modesto talks about full allocation, they say 42 inches is their base allocation. And when Turlock talks about full allocation, that's 48 inches, so 4 acre feet. OID does not use a number, but it's kind of an assumed that a regular year is at least 48 inches. Because we still have people that are pasture people that may use more than that.
Yes.
The innovation and forward thinking of many local water districts over the years has helped bring irrigation delivery into the future to help ensure growers receive as much water as possible each season. And OID is no exception. The district has executed a number of new methods and technologies for water delivery and savings through things like the Rubicon automatic gate system and implementing over $100 million in upgrades in recent years.
Rubicon is one brand name of new technology using flow meters and automated gates, which allows us to control to a much greater preciseness the amount of water that stays in a canal, and being able to move that water with the touch of a button, to be able to adjust it automatically without somebody standing there operating the gate has just been a game changer for OID. Tom probably knows the number better than I do, but I think it's in excess of 30,000 acre feet a year that the district has gained in efficiencies so that we're able to use that water someplace else outside the district boundaries to decrease pumping and help out the basin. We're constantly working on it. We've just made some recent changes here to our organization to get people better trained on the new technology, being able to support it, with Rubicon being in Australia, it can create logistics issues with getting help from them, different work week, different time schedule, all those different things. But so we're investing in ourselves. And we also just acquired a $14.3 million grant from the federal government to expand our lateral to the far east edge of the district, which is where a lot of our overpumping issues come from. And so we're basically going to triple the size of that lateral and be able to put that much more water back into that system that now currently has quite a few flow restrictions in it. And so we can't, we have farmers irrigating at midnight because we can't keep enough water in that canal for everybody to be able to pump during the day. So it's going to be a game changer. It's going to put water in places we haven't put it before at a much greater quantity. And the good news is our ratepayers are not funding that. So that's great news.
Over the last 20 plus years, Oakdale has put in over $100 million in infrastructure upgrades. And if you look at that, one of the other things of Rubicon, there's also another part of them called Total Channel Control, where, as Scott says, we've got our SCADA people and Michael and his team, and they can control the flow of the reservoirs all the way down to the system to the gate on an iPad. And they can also see problems too. Trust me, there's problems. It's mechanical. Things happen. But the thing is growers like it because it's not water on demand, but it's as close as they're going to get.
Yeah.
And the other thing that it provides is, it keeps a steady head and a steady flow in our canals, and OID doesn't believe in lining canals. So we also get groundwater recharge from our canals by keeping more pressure on it. And with this total channel control, you can react faster, but you also get the groundwater recharge benefit.
Yeah, our savings have really come from, because we're able to manage that head, as Tom said, in the canals, we don't lose as much water downstream to folks that aren't paying for it.
Like other local districts, OID has built two regulating reservoirs to better serve its customers and be more efficient.
We have the Van Leer on the south side, and that one, I believe, is 240, 250, 260, somewhere in there. Yeah. And we're always considering, do we need more? Where would we put them? Or do we expand some of them? So, I mean, that's something the board's always looking at.
Yeah.
Because it helps regulate the system.
Yeah, the regulating reservoir kind of acts like a shock absorber on your car. When you hit a bump, that shock absorber slows down the impact so that you don't damage equipment on your vehicle. Same thing with water. Once you release it, water's going to flow downhill. If you don't have a way to control that or be able to act like a buffer in the regulating reservoir to take water in or release water out, if you don't have that in place, you're going to have huge operational spills at the end of your line. And, that's just water that's lost to somebody else downstream. That is something that we're working really hard to prevent. You'll never really get away from it 100% because you have to keep, even at the furthest outreaches of your system, you have to keep those canals full or the landowners can't get the water. So you're always going to have some, but that regulating reservoir is really important for us, especially like if we have an incident like a blowout in a canal. We can shut down that regulating reservoir. It could take 24 hours for us to decrease the flow at Goodwin Dam by the time it would actually reach the blowout at the end of our system. That reaction time for water that's been released working its way down the system, it just saves us a huge amount of water in the end.
For My Ag Life, this is Kristen Platts.
The USDA intends to again renew its charter of the Fruit and Vegetable Industry Advisory Committee. In a March 26 Federal Register notice, the USDA said it will again renew the committee's two-year charter, which is set to expire May 23rd. Since it began in 2001, the advisory committee has met up to 2 times per year to develop recommendations for submission to the Agricultural Secretary on issues affecting the U.S. produce industry. According to the agency, up to 25 members shall represent fruit and vegetable growers and/or shippers, fruit and vegetable wholesalers and/or receivers, brokers, retailers, fruit and vegetable processors and/or fresh cut processors, food service suppliers, organic and/or non-organic farmers, farmers markets, and community-supported agricultural organizations, state agricultural departments, and trade associations. Under the Biden-Harris administration, USDA has been focused on increasing trade opportunities for American agriculture. In 2023, total U.S. agricultural exports reached nearly $175 billion, making the last 3 years the best 3 years ever for U.S. exporters. In 2024, American farmers, ranchers, and agribusiness owners continue to have success abroad as USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service works for U.S. agriculture.
Pivot Bio, a sustainable agriculture company empowering farmers to change their nitrogen management practices, announced that its sustainability program, Innovator, has paid over $6 million to farmers for implementing better nitrogen management practices since its launch in 2022. Pivot Bio's head of commercial sustainability, Randy Minton, explains why the program is gaining popularity with farmers and companies looking to reduce their environmental footprint.
Through the Innovator program, we can help transform how the ag community really thinks about nitrogen. Pivot Bio's Innovator program provides a streamlined platform for validating nitrogen replacement with a more predictable and productive form of nitrogen, and provides a mechanism connecting our growers with companies looking to reduce their emissions.
This year, companies participating in Innovator made payments to reward Pivot Bio farmers for their practice change following the 2023 harvest. The largest transaction to date was the sale of 100,000 nitrogen credits to a global food and beverage company.
The size and scope of Innovator's partnerships represent a major shift in how companies invest in sustainable agriculture. Our program provides a prompt and annual payment to farmers and is actually the first sustainability program to focus on nitrous oxide emissions in agriculture.
Participating farmers receive revenue for the sustainability benefits generated on their farms as a result of using Proven 40, microbial nitrogen that can replace up to 250% of a farmer's total synthetic nitrogen use.
Farmers can earn a higher return on investment on their purchase of Pivot Bio products by replacing a portion of their synthetic nitrogen with Proven 40 and participating in the Innovator program. Pivot Bio's microbial nitrogen is really a game changer in establishing a more sustainable food system. It's better for farmers and better for our environment. Our goal with Innovator is to establish a low-risk program that supports and compensates farmers who adopt new nitrogen management practices. Farmers can better protect their land and environment while creating a new reliable revenue stream.
Pivot Bio anticipates making additional payments to farmers to round out the 2023 program. It is actively enrolling interested farmers in the 2024 program. For more information on Pivot Bio and how to participate in the Innovator program, please visit pivotbio.com. Michael Klibitz reporting.
USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service is now accepting applications for 3 grant programs, each with a unique focal point in promoting, marketing, and securing products.
Grant monies are now available from USDA for 3 programs focused on food security, access, and marketing. This is Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Jenny Moffitt.
The ACER Access and Development Program, the Federal State Market Improvement Program, and the Microgrants for Food Security Program.
With combined available funding for up to $12 million for these 3 programs. The ACER program focuses on the maple syrup industry through promotion and marketing. The Federal State Marketing Improvement Program addresses domestic marketing barriers and expands market access. And the microgrants program encourages increased production of specialty crops and products via small-scale operations. Grant application deadline dates vary by program, with further details on each available at ams.usda.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Farmers and ranchers from across the country descended on Capitol Hill this week to talk about labor challenges. Farm News reporter Chad Smith has more on the decades-long push for solutions.
Farm Bureau members went to Capitol Hill to talk with their senators and representatives about a labor shortage that's reaching critical levels. Arizona farmer John Boltz says the current system of utilizing H-2A workers is no longer viable.
We've been short of workers for well over two decades, and over the last year or two, we've been watching the use of that explode. When we're seeing H-2A used that heavily, we're in crisis mode in U.S. agriculture. It's an expensive program to use. It's bureaucratically challenging, and it takes a reasonable manner of expertise to navigate the system and actually get workers.
He says the farmers went to Capitol Hill to advocate for two key changes.
We're back here asking particularly for a freeze in the adverse effect wage rate that's part of the H-2A program, and asking for a suspension to the disaggregated worker pay rates that was introduced in 2023 so that more farms can stay in business, because we've really gotten to that point where we're so desperate that farms are deciding to shut down.
Boltz is asking other farmers and ranchers to get involved in advocating for a labor fix.
Call and contact their representatives in Congress and talk to folks with the administration about the issue, but also ask their workers and their employees to speak up to change this situation for all employers and employees. And I think the consumer needs to get the message as well. So we need to be talking to consumers, and we need to be talking to our customers.
Learn more at fb.org/labor. Chad Smith, Washington.
According to Farm Progress, increased attention among consumers to the healthfulness and environmental footprint of their diet has expanded opportunities for organic products both in the U.S. and abroad. These developments have major implications for international trade. In just a little over a decade, the total value of imported organic products has nearly tripled from $667 million in 2011 to about $2 billion in 2023. Over the same time period, U.S. exports have increased from $412 million to $582 million. On the export side, the majority of organic trade is in fruits and vegetables. These products accounted for about 60% and 30% of exports in 2023, respectively. Things have evolved differently on the import side. In 2011, U.S. organic imports were dominated by coffee and tea. These products accounted for 84% of imports at the time. Today, coffee and tea represent only 34% of U.S. organic imports. This is not to say that these imports have disappeared. In fact, the value of coffee and tea imports has increased from $563 to $673 million over the time period. So the decline in the import share of coffee and tea is actually due to the rapid expansion in the import of other organic products, namely fruit, which accounted for about 50% of organic imports in 2023. Canada is the largest market for U.S. organic products, followed by Mexico, Japan, Taiwan, and South Korea. In terms of organic imports, Mexico is our largest trade partner, sending 11 million worth of organic products to the U.S. per year. Peru, Colombia, and Honduras are the second, third, fourth largest players, annually sending about 9 million, 7 million, and 7 million worth of organic products to the U.S. per year, respectively. That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Reports. I'm Haley Gilley. From all of us here at the JCS marketing team, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.